House Transportation Committee will come to order. Welcome, everybody. Committee, I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 2001. There are amendments out there, the Dash 4 amendments, and I think there's a copy of the Dash 2 amendments. I'm going to speak to the Dash 4. I'm going to go out and kind of go through them and let you know what's in it. And I really wish today I was handing you a more complete set of amendments for this bill. But as they probably start coming in dibbles and drabs, I guess, as we move along. But what you're getting is the easy pieces, I think, of the puzzle. So with that, I'm going to turn the gavel over to my co-chair and go out.
Great. She's already opened it.
Yeah, but she's going to speak to them, and then
she's going to.
Yeah.
Welcome, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee, I'm bringing you the Dash 4 amendments, and as I said, probably the easier pieces of this puzzle as we move along. And I can start with Sections 1 and 2,
Patrick,
which will direct the Commission, the Transportation Commission, to study best practices for stakeholder input and efficiency processes and report back to the legislature. And then you have a second sheet here. That was...
Madam Chair?
Yes.
State your name.
Representative Terry Beyer, House District 12. And you have a proposed Dash 4 amendments for House Bill 2001 that's just a little more detailed than what I just gave you. These are kind of the studies piece of this. And I think that has been put in back to if people want to look at it. So in its best practices, reviewing the responsibilities given to state, counties, and cities for improvement, maintenance, and management of our system. Identify opportunities to achieve greater program efficiencies, study national best practices, and these came, and what I didn't clarify is a lot of these pieces that were the easy ones came out of a lot of work over the interim from the Governor's Vision Committee and the Governor's Governance Committee. And I know we have people from ODOT and we have a representative from the Governor's office if we have specific questions about the discussion that went on about these, and I'm sure they'll be happy to outline them. Then Section 2 sunsets the task forces in January of 2014. Then under cost-saving measures, we have Sections 3 and 4, and Sections 3, it directs ODOT and the OTC to develop one or more pilot studies in the Portland metro area to study the effect that congestion pricing may have on traffic congestion. And then it says they may include time-of-day pricing, variable tolls. There will be more detailed information on this, and we have an outline of that. We're probably having that drafted into an amendment that has been put together by the mayor of Portland, Washington County, Clackamas County. They've all agreed on this language. So we'll have an amendment coming that will outline this program at a later date, but that everybody has agreed to a program. So that will probably be inserted into this bill. Sections 6 and 7 talk about least cost planning, and that directs the department to work with the local MPOs and local governments to establish a least cost planning model. And they'll have to bring that back to us no later than 2011. And co-location of facilities, which we heard yesterday in committee, which is basically just allowing this to happen in more timely fashion if it's deemed that there are cost savings that we can get out of that. Connect Oregon 3. See, I'm working on a different... I better go back to this one so I don't get too far out of sync. We've also asked for transparency. We've asked ODOT to develop a easier, accessible website for people to track what the department is doing and the projects, and be able to go directly to a project in a certain area to find out how far along it is, and completion date. They've looked at a few other websites around the country, and Washington State has an extremely good website. So we're requesting that ODOT makes this a little more user-friendly for the public. Least cost. I'm working off two lists, so I'm I'm having to be careful here. So, Connect Oregon 3 is the next one. Those are in sections 8, 9, and 10. The number for Connect Oregon 3 has been reduced from where the governor's level was. Not because that's really our choice. I think that reflects the economy and the state of our bonding capacities. So we're looking at a little smaller number, but we're basically leaving the framework the same as it was in Connect Oregon 2, which worked very well, and the floor for 10% in each of the five regions. And so with that, the next piece of it is electric vehicles. And the bill calls for, defines a new class. We've heard a bill in the committee before, so we've had a bit of a discussion on that already. And I think what is different in this one is because we've actually had two bills, and one was 40 miles per hour, one was 45, so we've increased it to the 45, under 45 miles. I'm just reading this, and this doesn't actually read quite right, does it?
No.
So I better double-check the language in the bill that it doesn't say what it says in the summary there. So, and they'll have they'll adopt safety standards for medium-speed electric vehicles and can deny registration if they don't meet those. I think I talked about co-location earlier. Section 16, you'll see a lot of nice little blanks, which hopefully will be becoming filled soon. And as we go even further, you'll see more little blanks there. But when you get to 23, Section 23 is a plate manufacturing fee. And this will allow ODOT to increase the plate manufacturing fee to recover the cost of making plates. And this fee has been agreed upon, and that was a $12 fee for a single plate and $24 for a pair. And that's for lost or replaced new plates. So then Section 24 increases the custom plate fee on, and these are your vanity type plates. And that fee will increase from $25 to $50 per year. And that money will go to fund our passenger rail, which will most likely be moving off. The last little piece will be moving off of the general fund this session, regardless of whether we find the revenue to replace it. This is revenue that could replace the general fund in that particular instance. And then you have your effective dates, which would be January 1st of 2010. I skipped one. Pay-as-you-drive insurance. And this would extend the sunset date by 5 years to 2015 for an income tax credit for companies that offer pay-as-you-drive auto insurance. And this is a program that has been used very little, and not a lot of companies actually offer it, but the thinking is that more people might start taking advantage of this, and they can buy it when they need it. And with that, I can answer any questions.
Questions? Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if you're going to invite any testimony today, but I would like to know a little bit more about lease cost planning and what the vision is for that. And then I also follow. The other thing was the vehicle thing that when I read through this, that was. But you caught that.
So yes, I did catch that. I think that was a mistake on the summary. It should be under 45 miles per hour. So,
but if you want to talk to lease cost planning, or
I will. I was opening this up for public testimony, and I hope we have someone in the audience that can answer that question. But we will make sure that over the next 3 days or so, we will get that question answered.
Thank you.
I think. Well, I'm not Chair.
Shoffler. Thank you. But you're doing a great job, Madam Chair. I'm in support. You've done a lot of hard work on this, you and a lot of other good people, and I will be supporting the bill with just a few minor language changes relating to consultation, and we'll discuss it later at length. But unfortunately, you and I and Representative Gilman are going to get and Representative Edwards are going to get another whack at all this, so. But mine are very minor, Madam Chair.
Okay.
The substance
well, I
of the
certainly
bill,
appreciate
I support.
That.
Let's go forward.
Yes. Okay. Any
Representative
other?
Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Beyer, this is an enormous amount of work with a lot of different moving parts. I guess my question is mainly a process question as opposed to a content question. The Dash 4s have a lot of things in here, conversations, various things, heard about other different moving parts that may or may not exist. Should we expect that this is an ongoing process with further amendments or perhaps other bills or things that we'll be looking at that will be part of a larger transportation package? Or?
Yes. There, Mr. Chair, committee, and Representative Bailey, there will be more amendments to this bill. There will most likely be at least one other bill coming with pieces of the package in it. This will probably come from the Senate. I think they're starting it today over there, looking at a payroll tax for transit. And there have been discussions about additional types of infrastructure. The question is whether that comes out of this or if that comes from a different direction. This is definitely a work in progress, a slow progress at that, but I think it has been speeding up, and we'll be getting more amendments to you very soon.
Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Beyer. just a couple questions, and just to get them out there, and I don't, if no one shares my interest in this, I'm happy to also take any of these answers offline. I'd like to know a bit more about the passenger rail fund, what that looks like, passenger rail is taking on a lot of different dimensions and contours of late, and I'd like to see if we're thinking more broadly around that term and what those funds could be used for. So I would like to know about that, if that's possible. And then I'm actually really interested about the congestion pricing pilot program. Specifically, to what purposes the funds that are generated from congestion pricing, what they can be put to fund. Are there the same constraints around those as the Highway Trust Fund, or because we're dealing with a different problem since we're not paying for use of the roads or for gasoline, but rather we're working on reducing greenhouse emissions, whether or not we can use those funds for a greater purpose? I'd like to have that discussion at some point, if possible.
And I'm not prepared to answer you today.
I don't think anybody is.
somebody might be able to help us out a little bit on what's happening with passenger rail and what that looks like today. I have a feeling the congestion pricing is one we'll get back to you on.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chair.
Oh.
Yeah. this may be for staff, but it is my reading, and I just want a confirmation that the dash twos are in the dash fours, so the dash fours are now the operative document.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, my reading of it is that they are very close. I think the one substantive difference is that there's one particular subsection 5 of the dash twos, I think, was not in And the dash twos allow for requests that the interim committees prepare legislation for implementation by the 76th Legislative Assembly. That's not in the dash fours. And also the repeal date for the dash twos is 2012, and I believe the section a repeal for in the dash fours is 2014. But other than that, I think they're identical.
Okay.
Oh, Representative. I'm sorry. I'm not the chair either.
Yeah. Representative Edward.
Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, there's one additional change in the dash two compared to the dash four, and that is line two in the section ensures legislative involvement in the responsibilities listed in subsections 1 through 5.
But where is the
line two?
Line two of which?
Of the dash two
is not in the dash
is not in the dash fours.
Okay.
It basically guarantees that the interim House and Senate committees related to transportation will be involved in the review and other responsibilities listed in subsections 1 through 4.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and ask. Hopefully I can get this right. A.J. Zalita, Allison Graves, and Henry Kramer.
Can I just begin?
Yes.
Okay. I'm Dr. Zalata. I'm a member of the Oregon Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee to ODOT, and we're responsible for giving out the 1% money from the state funds for bicycle and pedestrian hardware scapes. As a reminder, in one of our distribution of $6 million for the biennium, about 53% of that money went to bicycle issues, lanes, et cetera. The other 50% went to pedestrian issues, sidewalk infill, et cetera. I have something just really simple to say. In Section 8 of this Dash 4, the Part B, it starts off, it's on page 3, it starts off with a safe, efficient, and reliable transportation network. We would urge you to include the phrase non-motorized transportation, which is our bailiwick, as one of those multimodal network of air, rail, public transit, non-motorized transportation, highway, and marine transportation moves people and goods efficiently. Thank you very much for being here, and thanks very much for all the hard work. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I could ask for clarification, you're referring to Section 8, Subsection 2, Sub B is where you're
correct.
Referring to? And
correct.
And you were suggesting additional language. What was the language again, if I could just...
I would add the three words non-motorized transportation.
And where would you add that at?
After the word transit and before the word highway.
Okay. All right. So, who's next?
Allison. Hello, my name is Allison Graves, and I work with an organization called the Community Cycling Center based in Northeast Portland. We're a nonprofit organization that helps to broaden access to bicycling and its benefits because we believe that bicycles help not only individuals be healthy, but communities as well. And I also encourage the committee to consider including the phrase non-motorized transportation. We work with a lot of people who use bicycles for transportation. We have a particular program called Create a Commuter, where we help low-income adults who are seeking and securing work to use the bicycle as an affordable and efficient way of getting to work. And it's a program we've been running for about 8 years. It's a national model. It's the only one of its kind in the nation. We get a lot of support and recognition for it. We serve about 200 adults a year in the program, and they are transportation. Thank you.
We'll go ahead.
Chair Bayer, members of the committee, my name is Henry Kramer. I represent the bus project. The bus project is involved in bringing young people into the democratic process, and so I just wanted to speak very briefly on just urging you, the committee, to support transportation choices in the bill as it moves forward. You know, from a youth long look perspective, it's necessary for us to be planning for livable, strong communities with robust economies. And transportation choices are simply a win-win for the state of Oregon. If our intention is to create more jobs with this bill, transportation choices will create more jobs. They tend to create 30% more jobs, according to the Political Economy and Research Institute. And if our intention is to keep Oregon beautiful and livable as we move forward, this transportation choices do that as well. Young people are going to be inheriting the infrastructure that this bill creates, and if we want it to be as beautiful and livable as it is today, or more so, structuring our cities to reduce driving, to incentivize bicycle and pedestrian transportation, all these things are hugely helpful toward keeping our communities livable, and we support the inclusion of those elements in the bill, particularly the six metropolitan area planning to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and having flexible federal funds going toward alternative transportation. And thank you very much for the opportunity to testify before you today.
Thank you. Questions from anybody? Representative Bailey, Shoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank you for bringing forward the non-motorized transportation language. If I read the sentence correctly, we have a list of different modes of transportation that then says these forms of transportation move people and goods efficiently, and it's hard for me to think of something that's more efficient than something that gets infinite miles to the gallon.
Unless I'm writing it.
Madam Chair, Representative Pauley can't correct it.
Say, how many cups of coffee does it take to motorize your vehicle? Representative Shoffler.
Thank you. I just want to clarify something. The bus project is very inspiring to get people involved in their political and government experience. But it's not just the young, is it? It's the young and the not so young.
Young of all ages.
Thank you. Just want to clarify it.
Thank you for the clarification.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can I have Nate Gulley? Welcome. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Bayer. I'm sorry. My name is Nate Gulley. I live in near Northeast Portland. Been in Oregon for about 5 years. Went to the U of O. Graduated this past spring. I guess I have kind of three really quick points. The first is that I don't own a car. Certainly can't afford one, especially now. Couldn't before, but certainly in our kind of current climate. It's just not something that's accessible to me. Even if I could afford to buy a car, just imagine paying like insurance on top of my student loans would just be too much. So I am bike and bus dependent. I ride the 6 down MLK from inner northeast into the East Side Industrial District, Produce Row. I used to ride the 33, but they're thinking about cutting it just because of all the cuts that are going on in TriMet right now. So I started taking the 6, a little bit farther of a walk to get to it, but it works. So the second thing is I got a chance to attend PowerShift, which was a climate justice conference in Washington, D.C. a couple months ago now. There just happened to be a U of O alum on the committee to select folks that were able to get scholarships. I wouldn't have been able to go if I didn't get scholarships to go to it. But I kind of had that good fortune of a U of O person who kind of pushed my application to the front. And I was able to see just all of these young folks, more than I'd ever seen united under one cause. I'm actually from Cleveland, Ohio originally, and I had a chance to go to Washington, D.C. for a couple of things when I was there, you know, big Iraq war protests, things like that, and got to see thousands and thousands of people converge on a city. But I'd never seen, until I went to D.C. for this climate justice conference, that many young people in one place for one reason. And it was to build a more just climate future. And one of the biggest things that everyone talked about the entire kind of weekend that we were there was having transportation options. was realizing that car dependency just won't do the trick anymore, especially for our generation. And I guess the last thing, really, as I mentioned, that I'm from Cleveland, Ohio originally, but the reason I came out here was for stuff like this. It's because everything that I knew about Oregon before I moved out here was that Oregon's a leader, especially when it comes to things like transportation, to climate justice, to creating a green future. And I think there's something to be said for that. I think there's something to be said for continuing to take the lead on things like this. I think it gives people a reason to be here and a reason to come here. It's certainly why I came here for school and why I stayed. So thanks very much for hearing me for a couple minutes.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you'll indulge another comment. In my waning time as fully half of the 230 caucus in the legislature, I want to say that it's refreshing to have young people come down and testify, and I hope that this is a message to lots of folks across the state that the legislature is open to them as well, and I hope that they'll feel comfortable coming, and I thank you for coming and testifying in front of us.
I don't see any other questions. Thank you again.
Thank you all.
For coming. Okay, and that was all I had signed up today. We had a couple questions, and I'm assuming Hans is, or Chris, one either or both, and I don't know if you can shed any light on the rail issue too, or...
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Hans Bernard, Governor's Deputy Legislative Director. I took some notes about the... questions that were raised in the comments, and so we'll try and address those the best I can, and I'm happy to answer any additional questions that you may have. First, to address Representative Call's question about the passenger rail fund, I think it would probably be best to connect you with our rail division manager, Kelly Taylor, who can outline all of the ways that that fund is currently used and how it operates for the state. To your second question, Chair Beyer.
Ask a quick question
sure.
on that.
And I can give some background.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask about the state's response to the president's unveiling of high-speed rail. So,
thank you, ma'am. You start the question right out of my mouth.
Okay.
I can tackle that. For the record, Chris Warner, Governor's Office and Department of Transportation. There's about a $9 million that the state provides for the operating of the Cascade Line, which is the two trains that go between Eugene and Portland. Last session, we were able to secure some of the other dollars that paid for half of that, so we only had about half of that come from general funds. So the proposal brought forward in the governor's package was to increase the amount of the vanity plate to take care of the rest of that. And so that would be completely take it offline in terms of general fund revenue. In terms of what we're doing with the president's stimulus package, it's an exciting opportunity. Within the ARRA bill, there's about $8 billion that's going to both the designated high-speed rail corridors, but also passenger rail. Indeed, so Ms. Taylor is in the process of getting rather her. We have a rail advisory committee doing that. We are looking at all the different options. We're beginning the outreach to the railroads in terms of where be the best place to invest those monies. The rules, the president's announcement came, they had to make their strategic plan within 60 days of the enactment of the bill, and I think by June 15th we'll have all of the rules and all the things we need to move forward. So we're having daily meetings in terms of gathering folks, getting input to figure out where the best investments are. Unlike some of the other modes of transportation with the highways or the airports, for instance, those are all usually public entities, where the railroads are mostly private corporations that we have to work with as partners. So we're starting that engagement with them. The Union Pacific is the major player on our half of the Cascade Corridor between between Eugene and Seattle. So we're actively engaged in Union Pacific, and they've been, I think we're looking at a really good partnership with them and moving forward with what we can do to put our best foot forward to invest those stimulus dollars.
Thank you. Nick, Representative Call.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I have... There are a bunch of questions on this. I'm going to put them out there. I don't need to answer them today, but I would like them on the record. First of all, I've been in touch with Kelly Taylor fantastic, very knowledgeable, has given me preliminary numbers on things just because I've badgered her, and has has been very accessible to me. So I just want to give her some kudos, because dealing with her has been fantastic. Just a couple things that were said. Concerned that the UP line is already being given seemingly front-runner status. The Oregon Electric line is also an option. I would want to make sure that we're looking at all of our options. I would want to make sure that we're including TriMet in these discussions. They have had to deal with putting a commuter passenger rail on heavily trafficked freight lines, and know what the costs are of that, costs that no one ever thought of to begin with. And so when doing the analysis of the UP line as opposed to a less heavily trafficked freight line, there might be efficiencies there that are not apparent. And so I want to make sure that we're not privileging one line or one idea over all of them, especially given how many variables are at stake here. And then wondering if we're revisiting the Cascade line altogether now that we have ideas put forward to create a high-speed rail corridor between Eugene and Vancouver, B.C., whether or not that Amtrak line is going to be supplanted by high-speed rail, hopefully under the president's vision, and whether or not the funds that we're utilizing for that will be able to be shifted over towards the high-speed rail. So I know those are a lot of questions, and like you said, we're not going to know anything until June 15th about even what we have to do to begin this process, but to the extent we can get some of these questions answered beforehand, I think it puts us in a position to be drawing down part of this $8 billion, $1 billion a year that's put set aside for over the next 8 years. So thanks, Madam Chair.
Yeah, okay. Sure. And clarification, my understanding is $8 billion that will go out then, and then there's going to be an additional $5 billion that he's built within his budget for the next 5 years. So
that's right.
So it's actually, if you add it all up, it's about
$13 billion.
And certainly, Madam Chair, Representative Call, the question of moving the passenger rail off the UP main line is something that we're actively pursuing in terms of discussions. Obviously, the Oregon Electric line, which is an interesting one, it's the track is in a lot probably worse shape than the mainline UP. So we're open to all of those, and I think what this has enabled us to do with the administration's proposal is to start having these discussions where before, passenger rail wasn't really on anyone's radar screen. So it's an exciting opportunity.
Yes. And one last comment, just to make sure that it's out there, is also looking at the advantages of not only phasing in the lengths of the project, so probably Portland to Salem, Salem to Eugene, and coming up with a master plan there, but also phasing in grade crossing closures to move from 90 mile per hour rail to something in excess of 100 mile per hour rail, also eventually electrifying the line, and looking out at the way we would face things and looking at what line is best suited to that need. And I think from my perspective, having a heavily trafficked freight line is going to be very hard to electrify and to shut down grade crossings and to get the amount of movement of people on those lines. So I want to make sure we're looking in the broadest terms about all of the things that we're going to do to get a high-speed electrified rail line that is safe and efficient. So thank you, Madam Chair. I'll quit talking about this now.
Thank you. So next question.
the next question that I heard, Madam Chair, was a question again from Representative Call about the congestion pricing pilot language that is contained in the Dash 4 amendments. The question that you raised, I think, is exactly why we need a pilot program, and that is, what are the technical implications of this type of pricing model? How would it be implemented? What would we do with the revenues that were associated from that? I think that is exactly why, and in the Governor's Vision Committee, there was some discussion about those issues, and the feeling that when and if the state makes a policy decision to move in that direction, we're going to need some experience under our belt to inform that pricing model, to see how we can begin to give motorist cues about when is an efficient time to use the road system, and if those funds then can be used to also shift demand in other ways. So I think that this language and any language that might be forthcoming would concentrate on the area of the state that seems to be most ready for this conversation in terms of the Portland metropolitan region. One of the things that we took great pains to articulate in the Governor's Vision Committee process and in the materials that we presented to you late last year was that this would be a voluntary endeavor. We want to make sure that as we engage with Oregonians in this conversation that we do so in a way that is collaborative, so we get the best results and get the best information possible to lay the groundwork for the future. The last question that I heard was from Representative Berger, and that was a little bit more information about the development of a least cost planning model. In the Governor's Vision Committee process, this was discussed as a directive to the Department of Transportation to work with other state agencies and local entities to really develop an assessment tool that would allow the department to put different filters on transportation decision making. So an example that has been used is in an area where there is a significant amount of freight movement. Does it make sense to add a climbing lane or add another lane to accommodate increased truck traffic, or does it make sense, better sense financially, from an environmental perspective, to upgrade the existing rail lines that exist in those areas or add a switching yard so that you could accommodate more freight traffic there? This would really pose the question to the department on a per problem basis. If this is the transportation problem we're trying to address, what is the most economically viable, what is the most environmentally effective and friendly way to address that transportation problem, and does it make more sense to look beyond simply the highway mode? So this directive in the Dash 4 amendment would be a directive to the department to begin the conversation with their other state agencies about how to develop that planning tool and come back and report to the next legislative session.
Representative Berger.
Follow up, Madam Chair, please. Thank you for that. I wonder, in the visioning process, was this based on some models from other states? Some of these things, when you describe them, seem self-evident. Why aren't we doing that now is almost what you want to say. So why do we need to tell them to do this? Is this based on some model from other venues that is proven and they can go off of, or are we making something new up?
Chair Beyer, Representative Berger, I think this is based on other states and other conversations that are engaged in transportation at a national level. I will also tell you that you'll recall that our Transportation Vision Committee was chaired by a utility executive, and this is a very frequent model used in the utility industry.
See where it came from.
This is stuff that the department has been considering actively at this point. Folks in the department have been working on the development of these models and doing some of the preliminary groundwork. This was simply included in the governor's transportation package as a way to engage the legislature in that conversation and provide the department with some legislative directive to engage more fully in that process.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hans, when you and Chris, when you go forward on a pilot for congestion pricing, are you going to be looking at other countries' experiences? Because I know in London, and we actually had a presentation here earlier, but in London they have changed it in the last several years to follow, I can't remember who they're following, but they're changing their method of collecting and whatever they do to catch you when you're in there.
Chair by Representative Boone, I think we are very open to a number of models to try and figure this out. I in many ways, I think this will be fairly cutting edge because we haven't done much of it in the Northwest at least. So I think we're going to be fairly open in working with the jurisdiction that wants to do this. So it's going to take some time, I think, to exactly find that the right model that's going to work for our lifestyle.
And I have a question about that, too. Given that this is a pilot that's going to be done in a large metropolitan area, and it would be probably my understanding or my wish that since this is something that's going to be happening in their territory, that these jurisdictions would be the ones that would be taking the lead on how they wanted this to work in their areas, and that the department would be working with them to make sure that as they go forward, this is a very seamless transition into a new system, and I would hope for you know, a feeling of cooperation, and I don't know that I necessarily want to be involved, you know, as a legislature in drafting this, but I guess, and it's not really a question so much as it is that this would be my hope, that if we're asking a local jurisdiction to do this, that we're going to let them take the lead on it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I cannot predict the future, but that kind of process may give me great angst, because we have I-5 serves the entire region of the Western North America, and to let one community control that major artery and hold up something that we as a state could do, I'm very, very, very concerned about that happening. Talk about filters. Well, I'm not interested in some city that I represent thousands of people from being a filter on transportation. I want this state, I as a legislator, want to have control over those decisions and the major input on how we spend the money that I'm going to vote to pay for these things with. So I, with great respect to my chair, I definitely do not want to defer to any city or metropolitan planning organization or any other local government when it comes to a major project like the Columbia River Crossing or something of that magnitude. When you start whittling down to these smaller projects, they have very direct impacts on neighborhoods. That's fine. And I know the Columbia River Crossing is going to have an impact on a neighborhood, but it serves the whole western seaboard of North America. So I'm not going to let it go down to a few people that are very vocal in a city council meeting. I'm very concerned of that happening, and I do not want to do that. So I don't even need to clarify my concerns any more than that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Call.
And I would just like to say that I'm in complete agreement with Representative Schaffler on this. I think we should have a thorough and vocal debate about the Columbia River Crossing in this building before we
get
spend $1 on it. So I appreciate that, Representative Schaffler, and I look forward to the discussion.
Good.
And I want to clarify my position. And I don't want ODOT and I don't want the state to be abdicating jurisdiction to anyone. I just want to make sure that we are working cooperatively and definitely considering the input on the jurisdiction that is volunteering to do this pilot project.
Right.
So, given that, I don't see any other questions for the department and anyone else. And sorry. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for being here. Thank everybody for coming. And hopefully we have more to share next time we meet. And committee, we are scheduled. Is that what I'm saying? Okay. We are scheduled for tomorrow night at 5:30 again for a public hearing on this bill.
In hearing room A.
In hearing room A. And hopefully there is more. 5:30. There is more to hear. Yes.
Is that, Madam Chair, is that when Ways and Means is meeting? I am scheduled to be sitting with Ways and Means since it is the public hearing in my area, if you wouldn't mind.
No. If I'm also wondering that if we haven't received new amendments by then, if we have a need to meet. So we'll stay posted.
Thank you.
And I'll close public hearing on House Bill 2001, and we are adjourned.